So welcome everybody to All About Symbian Insight number 84, and we've got the bearded one back. Ewan, are you there?
I am, yes. Sorry, for a minute there I thought Dave Lee Travis was joining us, but yes, hello. Found time in the Fringe schedule, basically because today's the day when half of the theatres go dark, so the performers get their day off, and I keep on working.
And Rafe Blandford's here as well.
I'm here as ever.
We've got quite a few items of news and a few items of debate and some questions. As always, I'm going to kick off right into the content. There's been a Google YouTube client update to 2.2.17. Significant is that it's now full screen on the Nokia 5800, N97 and Samsung IE910 HD, something that people like me have been crying out for months. And there's also extra languages and countries supported. There's still no login, still no favourites, still no commenting. I'm sure all that's to come. You can get all this same content in the mobile version of the YouTube site. So, and for now, that's probably the way to go, but it's good to see that Google haven't forgotten their client. Interestingly, if you log into the m.google.com on the N97, you don't get offered this client. However, I have extracted the SIS and sent it to Ewan Spence, who has just installed it. Did it work all right, Ewan?
I have. It worked perfectly. I went straight in, and I checked video with two things. Firstly was a regular fan-based video, which was the Scottish Falsetto Sock Puppet Theatre, who are playing at the Edinburgh Fringe, and you should all go and see them, which is a 320-240 video. Plays very nicely and smoothly. No jerky, no jumpiness. I also looked at the, I decided to look for something with big and lots of movement, and also one that was in widescreen. So I took the Star Trek trailer from the film that came out in May. And to be honest, the quality was as good as the video that was playing on the device. Yes, I mean, it is a small screen on the N97 compared to something like, say, the Sony PSP, but it was smooth. It wasn't jerky. I like the fact that most of the button controls were nice, big buttons on the screen, so it was obviously designed for finger control that had a little bit of transparency as well, so you could see behind them. So the interface is actually really nice. Yes, there are things that are missing, as we pointed out, but to just jump in and watch something, this works. And at the moment, the N97, I'm really concentrating the moment on what works rather than technical stuff in the background. So YouTube works.
Rafe, is there a reason, do you think, why Google keep excluding the N97 from official compatibility for this client? It works perfectly, so why do they keep ignoring it?
It's always difficult to tell, but I would imagine for something like this it could well be user testing, and you know, it may be that they're putting it through a testing process and there's something they don't like which we haven't spotted, or it just hasn't been finalized going through the testing, whereas the 5800, which has been around a lot longer, well, a bit longer, and has sold far more, it actually will have far more people using YouTube through it, so perhaps that's why they've been concentrating on that. I can't think of any specific reason.
I think the reason is that Google can't actually afford to buy an N97. I think someone needs to buy Google an N97 so they can test this.
If Google have got trouble, where are we going to go?
Staying with the N97, there's been a firmware update to version 12 point something or other. As ever, Ewan has my N97 in Scotland, and I'm rather looking forward to having it back one day. But in the meantime, I think, Rafe, you've applied the update. What's new in version 12?
So what they've done with version 12, it's really a stability and a performance fix. So there's very little in the way of new stuff. But I did notice that it seemed to be handling the free RAM a little better than before. And that's kind of a performance tweak. And overall, it does seem slightly more speedy. These things are very subjective and difficult to judge. But certainly, it does just seem a little bit more stable. Things like some of the transitions between the screens are a little bit less jerky. But as I say, this is really, bug fixes. So there may be some things that have been fixed. I think there's a bug in Gallery that's involved with zooming that's now gone. But unless you actually notice specific bugs, you probably won't notice all that big a difference. And as we said with the N97 firmware, there is actually due sort of a big one that will start adding functionality. I think notably amongst that will be the Skype functionality that was previewed at MWC, ability to make Skype calls and do Skype IM as well. I suspect we'll also see some sort of service additions from Nokia, and that will become probably in a version 20 firmware update that will be considered a more major update and will actually add in functionality. And that's the point where we may see things like internet radio come back as well. But as I say, that's not this firmware update. That's the next one, which I would estimate will be out sometime in late September or maybe October. But for the time being, this one's probably a worthy update if you've been having stability or performance problems, because it does improve in that area. And it does have, the N97 does have user data preservation, so it's pretty easy to upgrade things and everything else will be left pretty much untouched. You may lose something like an N-Gage install. Some people have reported that. It didn't happen to me. But all in all, you know, it's probably not an essential update in terms of if you want to get your hands on the latest stuff. If you're working fine on the N97, don't worry too much. Maybe wait for the version 20.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And given the situation I'm in, even though I'm working from home for the fringe, I'm out most of the time. And I'm actually loath to apply the new firmware, purely because I'm essentially on a trip at the moment. I only have a very small amount of time. And at the moment, the N97 works for me. So it's like, do I want to apply that firmware while I'm away traveling on a big business trip where it could go wrong? And, you know, I know we have user data preservation and everything, but I don't have time for that and I don't want to risk it. So at the moment, I'm still in one firmware back. I think it's version 11. And when it's all over, I'll apply the firmware. It's, I mean, 99 million times out of 100 million, I don't think it would make any difference and it would go through fine. But it's still a computer and something could still happen.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing with firmware updates. You know, techies are generally very keen to apply them. But it's worth bearing in mind that even with sort of the updates that Nokia have made in terms of being able to do it over the air and actually alerting you to the fact that firmware updates are happening. For example, I got a text message this time around from sort of the equivalent of Club Nokia, My Nokia, I think it's called these days, telling me there was a firmware update, and it popped up when I connected it to PC Suite, and it's also in the SW update. But of course, most people will sort of look at firmware and say, I don't want to deal with that now. It's still really the problems of techies, and maybe that needs to be improved over time. But especially in this case, I'd say it's not necessarily an essential update. And even when, you know, it does add new functionality, unless you want it, you know, there's always some doubts about whether you should do it or not.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to trying perhaps a version 20 firmware in a couple of months' time and completely hard resetting an N97 and, you know, starting from scratch as if version 20 was the first shipping firmware, yeah. At which point I think the device might make an awful lot of sense.
Yeah, and I think hopefully they'll fix some of the problems, for example, with the internal memory, which for most users tends to get quite low once you install things because of some of the restrictions on what's sort of in the ROM drive versus what has to go onto the C drive, notably things like N-Gage and Nokia Maps 3, but also OVI contacts. So yes, I mean, I think version 20 could be very significant, and by contrast would be a sort of an upgrade that I would probably recommend that anybody make.
Okay, as many people will have known, we've been looking at the E52 and E55 from Nokia, both in the house. Rafe's had the E52, I've had the E55. The review of the 55 is up on the site. Azri Albakar over in Asia is doing the E52 review. He's got one as well. But the big question I just wanted to touch on briefly was this whole thing of T9, i.e. numeric keypad, versus half QWERTY. And it's been fascinating seeing people's reactions. From a techie's point of view, half QWERTY looks ideal. You get all the wonderment of a QWERTY keypad in something that's only an inch and a half across. And yet there are significant compromises, as you'll have read if you saw my E55 review. But from the two devices, I say I'm leaning, despite my apparent slowness by some people's standards in T9, to the E52, which is more familiar and has less showstoppers. The half QWERTY keypad, I still think, has problems once you get beyond basic words and you start going into proper sentence construction and grammar and punctuation and putting in real names. Yes, you can add words to its database in the same manner as T9, but the moment you start doing anything that involves correct English, then you're kind of fighting the interface to make it look perfect. Maybe I'm unusual. Maybe people send out Twitter updates and SMS with phone speak and just forgetting capitalization, forgetting punctuation. But I'm a perfectionist. I want QWERTY input. I want text input on a phone to look like proper text. Am I so unusual, Rafe?
I think possibly you are, Steve. I mean, I certainly didn't have the same problems with the E55. I would add that I only saw it for about 2 days before it went off to Steve, just in time to do some photos and have a quick play. I'm looking forward to having another try with it. And I think, you know, it's the sort of thing you do actually come used to over time. And, you know, the thing about the half-QWERTY is it is faster than, and at least it was for me at least, than traditional T9, even allowing for some of the gotchas around punctuation and real names. And honestly, with the real name thing, I mean, the fact you can add it to the dictionary, I do think makes a significant difference. And also auto-completion, which I know Steve considers a gimmick, I find quite useful. So for me, the E55 allows for faster text entry, but retaining the all-important form factor of the E52, which, you know, is incredibly impressive. You know, it's not just the thinness, it's a very small device. And when you step up to something like the E75 or the E72, you are getting a significantly bigger device. And so I think it's one of these areas where in all of mobile phones, it's always a compromise between one thing and the other. However, I would agree with Steve and say that, you know, because of this kind of, you know, almost this terror factor of trying a half-QWERTY keyboard, or, you know, the sort of move away from what's traditional will put people off, and consequently, I'm rather a shame, I think. You know, the E52 is clearly going to be a much better seller than the E55, and I think the E55 may end up sort of falling between the stalls of the E52 on one hand and the E72 on the other hand, which will probably be the choice of maybe the sort of enthusiast in terms of those wanting a QWERTY keyboard. And that's a shame, because frankly, the E55 is a very nice device, and certainly I think one of the things that's a real highlight of all these new E-series devices, and this applies to the E52, E55, and I would have thought the E72 as well, is the software and the hardware being tuned very nicely. You know, this is among the best performing S60 device I've ever had my hands on. The same way that the N86 is also a very good performer. There are a few glitches, but compared to sort of the early versions of other devices and the overall speed and performance, these are really, really good devices. And the fact that they're sort of somewhat hidden by all the hype around touch is a shame, but of course I don't think will affect their sales all that much, and certainly I'd expect, you know, the E-series devices to continue their upward progression in sales numbers.
Yeah, just to go back to one thing you were saying about auto-completion, whether that's the gimmick or not, that maybe that's another debate for another day, but just briefly, pick a word out of the air, difficulty. Say I want to put difficulty in, I start typing D-I-F-F, and it prompts up difficult, and I have to keep on typing all the way to a type difficult, and then add the Y myself. I guess you could say, well, you accept the shorter version, difficult, and then add the Y manually, but it's that kind of problem. Whenever I want to try a long word, right, this is a golden opportunity for auto-completion, I find it's just the wrong word until I'm nearly at the end of the end of word anyway, and it's just frustrating.
Well, I think sometimes, I've come across the same thing, but some of the time it does get it right, and it's more a case of, you know, if you're looking at the screen, and this is perhaps one of the things, it depends on how you use the device. If you look at the screen and the keyboard, you just press the space bar and that completes it. If it's not going to do it, you just have to keep going with the text. And I guess it's sort of just like getting used to a half-QWERTY keyboard. You have to get used to using that auto-complete. And it doesn't, as you say, work. But when it does, it does just knock maybe a second or two off your typing time.
Yeah, I have to echo your opinion as well on the speed of these devices. So it's very noticeable. Looking at the 52 and 55, as with the E71 at first, everything just zips along. There's just no waiting on almost any operation, and as compared to some of the N series devices, which is inexplicable really. They run virtually the same operating system, same user interface. But yes, the E series team do seem especially keen on making sure everything really rocks along very fast. Ewan, have you got any thoughts on this whole predictive QWERTY, half QWERTY versus T9?
I have, yet, and I think this is a play simply for the American BlackBerry crowd. One of the most visual things on a phone when you see it in a shot now is how you do the input system. It's one of the things where people, when they see the E75 and the keyboard slides out from underneath, they go, ooh. And the same with the Nokia N97 when the screen pops up and swivels and everything. So I think the fact that it's got this the half QWERTY keyboard is simply because people who are used to it and some of the BlackBerries that are very popular in America, where the E-series devices are trying to get a handhold, will go into the store and see, well, I could get a regular E-series device that has a normal number pad on it, or there's one just like my BlackBerry. And that means they will go for that one. So I actually think that, yes, technologically, there will always be problems in software and tweaks. One of the things that always gets you in completion is it adds a space at the end. So you have to go to the end, then backspace, and then put your letter in, and then a space bar in again, which is a problem with difficulty. But I think this is purely a marketing play. They've found a different segment of the market that has slight differences, and now they can really push down and try and get the rims converted.
Yeah, no, I think that's right, Ewan. And one of the first things I noticed about the E55 was it reminded me of the BlackBerry Pearl, which is also the one that came in lots of different colours. And exactly the same thing is going to happen with the 55 and the 52 because of the aluminium use means they can anodize it into many colours. And we're already seeing that with the launch colours. Wouldn't be at all surprised to see, you know, bright orange or pink, as we saw with the Pearl in terms of colours. And you're right, you know, there is that sense of familiarity. And it's interesting because, you know, the Pearl was one of the first BlackBerrys to have that crossover appeared into the consumer space. And so, you know, maybe the E55 can... I mean, the E-Series has already done that with things like the E65, but the E55 maybe has possibilities there as well.
Okay, thanks, Ray. Moving on, the Obby Store, Nokia's Obby Store, has its own search function built in. However, it is not known for being 100% reliable, and...
Sorry, I've just got this image of Don DeLuise just sitting down in a dark corner with some spider webs going, search function, it's over there somewhere.
So teaser two on our own Obby Gaming site, in conjunction with Mr. Rafe Blandford, have put together an unofficial replacement search engine for Obby Store. How does this work, Rafe?
So this uses the Google custom search engine, which basically allows you to use the Google search engine sort of results index, but just limit it to a certain web address, essentially. And this means that you can search across store.obby.com without having to see results from anywhere else. And so naturally it just brings up stuff. It's not perfect, it won't get every game, but I think if you're looking for something specific, it is quite a nice way to, if you can't find it using Obby Store's own search, it sort of represents a nice alternative. And I think it's probably fair to say there's plenty of problems with the Obby Store still to be addressed, as indeed you'll see in also a headline article that published around the same time as this podcast. And so, you know, doing this was a sort of interesting way to sort of just add that bit of functionality. And we are looking at some other Obby Store stuff in terms of making things a bit more accessible to the sort of techie audience.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, on to some reader questions. We often have them sent in to our various Twitter accounts. I'm Steve Litchfield on Twitter. Ewan is Ewan Spence. And Rafe is Rafe Blandford. Unsurprisingly, there's also an unofficial AAS Twitter account. So Mark Brockman says, what do you think about Nokia's strategy of having two separate platforms for high-end devices? And I suspect this is one that's going to run through the next couple of months. Ewan, do you want to take this one first?
Well, Nokia have a history of using multiple platforms. We had NOS, we had S20, we had S40, we still have S40 actually, we have S60, and yes, they are playing around with Linux and MIMO at the top level. They also have whatever they use to script their set-top boxes as well. So it's not as if Nokia are religious about one thing. They will adapt over time. And yes, operating systems need to be replaced. People are not still running Windows 3.1 when they have more modern choices, but the influence of Windows 3.1 is still felt today in Windows Vista and Windows 7, and I think that's going to happen at the same. Now, why they're using Linux at the top and why they're putting S60 into that sort of medium to low term is an interesting one. I would love to be in the meetings on that one. I think so would every single technical correspondent that is out there on the internet. Partly, I think it's attraction. They can say it's Linux, it's shiny, so they can get developers and coders through, which they are, let's admit it, having problems getting developers on board with S60 at the moment. Partly I think it's because that's what R&D do. They go out, they try new stuff. If it works, they try it a little bit more. It's an almost evolutionary process. And Nokia have been playing with Linux for a long time, right back to the N700s and previously before that. They had a look at the 7710 and that's using Symbian OS in that form factor. Then they moved to Linux. Then they had a door close in the background. Then they moved on to the rest of the N series devices. And they're now carrying on a natural evolutionary progress. It's whether you, as a commentator, you view that as threatening to everything else that Nokia uses or complementary. And that does remain to be seen. That's one for Nokia World, I feel. But I suspect it's going to be a very much a complementary service.
Yeah, Rafe, any take on that?
Yes, well, I think the thing that one has to realise about software platforms these days is that the value is moving up them. And what I mean by that, the actual sort of application layer and more particularly the service layer sitting on top of them, is more important than the actual OS. And Nokia's long had a strategy of trying to be agnostic towards its technologies, and we've seen this recently with its attitude towards chipsets. And to a certain extent, you're seeing the same pattern when you see its investments in sort of things like Navtec and QT, Qt, or Qt by Nokia, I think it's now being called, for the software side of things. So there's this sort of general idea that, you know, there'll be a layer of services, and that's obviously the Ovi services, sitting on top of both Symbian and MAMO. And that sort of gives one reason why this sort of thing is happening, because it doesn't necessarily have the impact it would have done in the past. I think also you have to bear in mind that, you know, we're hearing a lot of talk about MIMO replacing S6G, replacing Symbian in the high end. And I think that's somewhat of a misconception, because the idea that it's going to just be a pure replacement is not really correct. What's happening is that MIMO is looking to address the new market that is emerging as mobile phones, mid devices and laptops sort of converge together. And this does go kind of hand in hand with the convergence of mobile and the web. And so we're seeing a new kind of device created. You know, it's a kind of mobile computer, but rather than being phone centric, it's being much more kind of web centric, if you like, or service centric. And clearly mobile phones, the ability to make calls, text message, is part of that. And so typically these devices are going to be relatively large touchscreens. You know, this is moving very much away from, if you like, the E52, which is phone-centric, relatively small device. And if you like, the devices like the N97 and the iPhone are kind of the forerunners of this new space. And the problem was that I think Symbian, not so much the operating system, but S60, the UI sitting on top of it, wasn't in a good position to address this space. So hopefully that kind of gives you a clearer picture. And actually, there is a lot that we still don't know about. We're actually going to have to wait to the formal announcement, despite all the leaks that are going on. And we've already said that S60 is being pushed down into the mid-tier further. But when we talk about flagship devices, people do think about the N97, for example. But you can also talk about things like the E-series flagship devices, which is something like the E72. And certainly all the non-touchscreen devices are going to remain Symbian for the foreseeable future, just because of the you know, the way that MAMO is structured in terms of its UI. That's, you know, touch-dominated. And we'll also see the hybrid devices. But I suspect, you know, it's not going to be a simple, you know, dividing line between these two types of devices. There will be sort of a mix in the middle. But certainly, I think, you know, the devices that are held up as the flagships in terms of that do everything, that tend to interest geeks most of all, yeah, some of those are certainly going to be MAMO powered. Do I think it's a problem that Nokia have two separate platforms here? Well, yes, in an ideal world, you have one thing that does everything. But I think we've seen the illustration of S60 trying to move into touch, but also earlier with devices like the E90, that it's very difficult to create a single platform or a single OS that works all the way across from the sort of the mid-tier devices right up into, you know, the high tier, especially as both the high tier is a sort of ever-expanding, creeping front, so moving further away from mid-tier devices. So I'm not sure it's possible to have a single platform that does everything, and therefore your best solution is to have multiple platforms. I still think it makes sense to keep those as few as possible, but it does allow you to create one platform around this kind of this top end space, which Nokia has had trouble competing in, precisely because I think its hands have been a bit tied by the S60 UI, not the Symbian operating system, I would say, itself, the actual UI. And so therefore this two approaches strategically makes sense, especially when you tie in some of the other factors of, you know, the legacy, but also the need to continue to address this mid-tier space. Obviously, it's not necessarily the ideal solution, but you have to bear in mind that these, you know, processes aren't always terribly predictable and have to take place within the context of market realities about continuing to ship phones. And so it's a long, waffly question to a fairly simple question, but hopefully that provides some of my viewpoint.
I think what's intriguing is the assumption that these high-end little tablet devices that will do everything will be massive market sellers. And I don't think that's true, to be honest. I think these are going to be more created sort of iPhone, iTouch generation. But it amuses me of the description of it's a slightly larger device with a large screen, with a touch screen, which connects to the modern things on the internet. It sounds remarkably, and I can't believe I'm going to have to get the money out for this one. It sounds remarkably like what Scion were trying to do all those years ago. And the interesting thing about it then was, although Scions were still popular when the smartphones, the 7650s came out, so I never really grew their market share over the years. It's just that there was a hardcore of users, and that was it, and they really couldn't burst out of it. It was when smartphones became much more accessible and less threatening that there was an explosion of portable computer numbers. Now, I'm sure that there's going to be a bit of a disagreement on that one, but I'm wondering if these tablets that are coming up are going to be big sellers. I mean, tablet PCs have been around for a long time. They've not taken off. Rumors of tablet devices, 6 to 9 inch screens from other manufacturers in America, again, long rumored, not yet taken off. The netbook PC form factor, yes, it's a nice form factor with the 9 inch screens, but they've not really seen stellar sales. So there's a lot of focus and attention on these high-end gee-whiz twinkly things, but is that where the bulk of company revenue is going to be made up? Probably not. But how do you balance company revenue with PR? And I think that is one of the factors that has made the decision to make MIMO that high-end software and let Nokia run a 2 or 3 strand solutions.
So yeah, I agree with you here, Ewan. I think the size of the addressable market here is questionable. I mean, I do think it's potentially quite large, but if I may, I draw an analogy between the way that smartphones were predicted in a very short order of space to sell hundreds of millions by 2004, and actually it's taken us really until the last couple of years to get to the point where you're doing hundreds of millions of smartphones in a year. I mean, it's just getting that point now, and surpassing the laptop market. People expected that to happen a lot sooner. I think a similar thing could happen with these devices. And yes, I would question the overall market size. However, I think an important thing here, quite apart from you were talking about revenue there, I think it may perhaps be relatively limited in revenue terms versus an overall revenue for a company like Nokia. But I do think the profit margins here, just as they are for the iPhone and the BlackBerry and the high-end N-series devices, could be quite significant. And so it could actually generate quite a significant amount of profit for Nokia. And so that's, of course, why it's attractive. In absolute numbers terms, yes, of course, the mid-tier, as typified by devices like the 5800, but also some of the E-series devices, are going to be numerically far more, there's going to be far more of them.
Yeah. Well, we've just got time for one last reader question sent in before we finish. Tim Salmon, regular reader of the site, says, any technical reason why the Nokia E90 can't have Share Online on board when the Nokia E71 can? Both have third edition feature pack 1. I'm going to go out on a limb here and give my theory. The Nokia E90's user interface and code can be thought of as a kind of tributary from the main S60 line. If you think of a team of coders going off and adapting the quarter VGA dominated S60 UI, one-handed UI, into this 800 pixel wide dual-paned interface specifically for the one device. It must surely have been some kind of deviant line off the main line of coding. And my guess is that it's now enough time has gone by and sufficient coders have gone under the bridge, as it were, that it's now not practical to go back and put extra hooks, extra things in the E90's interface and software. It's simply, it's too long ago now. It's, 2.5, 3 years since the original E90 development work was done. So, yes, although extra programs like Share Online, which is now itself a year or two old, and other programs like Internet Radio have come up through the ranks in S60 third edition feature pack 1 and are included on the likes of E71, I think it's probably too late to go back and too expensive to retrofit them into this slightly quirky, slightly odd, off to one side version of the code that's in the E90. Does that theory make sense, Rafe?
Yeah, I think that's probably spot on. It's also the fact to consider the E90 is an older device, and so putting investment into that doesn't really make any sense because it's not going to sell any more of the E90 now. It might make a few people a bit happier, but it's not going to have a significant impact on revenue or profit. And so Nokia are better off investing their money elsewhere.
Yeah. Or the short answer is follow the money. There's no money left in the E90. Therefore, they've done their commitments. They've done their we'll keep it going for a year or two after the purchase.
Yeah, and as Steve says, there's a sufficient difference in the branching of the code such that they can't just copy it across and hope it works. There's too much testing or tweaking required, so it's just not worth it, which is why you won't see it appear. And this happens with all the devices. You know, with the Feature Pack 1 devices, you're unlikely perhaps to get the most recent version of the S60 browser, or you get sort of a later version of Nokia Messaging, Nokia Maps, etc., etc. I think this is an inevitable result of product life cycles. And you will get exceptions to it when you have particularly good-selling devices. And I think the N95 that, say, for example, got the RAM stuff backported to it to increase its performance, that only happened because the N95 was selling in such numbers.
Yeah, it's worth noting, for example, just to back up what we've been saying, that if you can actually install Nokia Internet Radio onto the 90, but it only works on the external Corta VGA screen and not on the internal 800 pixel screen for exactly this reason. The code itself has been branched out and the applications have to know about this possible extra larger internal screen, and the apps don't know, and it would require too much money and too much work at this stage to go back and adapt those. And the E90 is a business device. People buy the E90 because they're doing a lot of text entry, a lot of email, Microsoft Exchange and so forth. They don't buy it because they want to listen to internet radio or share their pictures online necessarily, even though it's got a reasonable camera. It's not the prime focus of the device. So yes, there's just no incentive at Nokia, I guess, to go back and do any of this stuff. But it was a good question from Tim Salmon. And just to trail something, watch this space for a new audio podcast coming out of the All About Symbian and phone show world in the next few weeks. Trials are afoot. I'll leave you with that teaser. And but for now, we've run out way over time, so it's goodbye from me, Steve Litchfield.
And goodbye from me, Rafe Blanford.
And goodbye from me, Ewan Five-Star Review Spence,
who now owes the Scion Fund All About Symbian £13.50, which we shall be collecting at the pub meet. Bye for now, everybody.